some of the things that we sometimes feel are natural, like, for instance, saying, well, a small firm has a harder time, then let's give it a not so hard time by favoring it with lower taxes. Well, that means that they're actually taxing growth.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. Now, the evidence shows us that businesses in developing economies are smaller, they tend to grow more slowly, and they have lower turnover than similar businesses in advanced economies. But why? An article in the Annual Review of Economics pulls together what we know about the causes of this development problem and what parts of this are still effectively a black box that we need to look into. Marcela Slava of the University of Los Andes in Bogota is the author. She joins me now. Marcela, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Hello, team. Thanks for having me on the program.
I said smaller, Marcela, but if I'm running a business in a less developed country, how much more likely is it to be very, very small, a micro firm or self-employment, compared to if I was running a business in an advanced economy?
It is much more likely to be a very, very small business. So just to give you a sense of the numbers, if you're a worker in a developing economy, just a person who does any economic activity in a developing economy, you are three times more likely to be running one of those very small businesses or employed in one of those very, very small businesses. In fact, you're actually much more likely to be a self-employed person. Uh-huh. And that's sort of the most intense expression of how likely you are to be part of a business that's very small. A self-employed person is a one-person business.
But imagine that I was a talented and successful business person and my firm grew. Now, if it's a manufacturing firm in Colombia where you've done some work, sub-Saharan Africa, is it going to grow as big as the equivalent firm if it was in the US or in Europe?
Well, there are businesses that are quite large in these economies, and some of them are as large as very large corporations in the more developed economies. However, suppose you are a talented person and you are also willing to have your business grow, you are going to face much more hurdles to actually make that growth a reality. Yeah, your business may be as large as one in those developed economies, but you're just much less likely to be that person that you described.
What's happening along this growth path? Is the growth more slow? Is it sluggish growth? Or is there a case in developing economies where businesses grow and then they hit some kind of wall that they can't get past?
It's both. Uh-huh. It's more sluggish in general, and it's partly more sluggish because they hit those walls. Suppose you want to have your business grow, you have this idea, you want to invest, then you're less likely to get credit just because there's less access to credit. You're likely to get your credit more expensively than you would if you were in a developed economy. You're also more likely to hit regulatory burdens. It turns out that in many of the developing economies, the constraints to growth via, for instance, labor regulations that are costly to businesses tend to be more frequent or more intense. So you're likely to be facing a series of hurdles. The fact that you have much smaller businesses is also an expression of the fact that you have many more businesses in these economies. And that means that the average entrepreneur is not going to be as talented or as exclusively trained to be an entrepreneur as that person would in another economy.
Tell me a little bit about what this review of research has told you. And it was fascinating reading through it to find out how much we are still discovering in this area. If I am running a business and my productivity, my product quality is holding me back, which is something that we often talk about in growing firms in developing countries, what's getting in the way here? Why can't I improve it as much as I might want to?
productivity and quality product are absolutely crucial for a successful business. They mean that you're able to produce with less cost. They mean that you're able to reach the market more successfully. And so both things are crucial for you to actually be able to grow and compete. If you're lacking those, then that's one of the reasons why businesses don't grow as fast. So to start with, in answering your question of what's going on in these developing economies, then you're starting from a pool of both talents and access to technology that's worse than it would be in other economies. So you're starting from the very beginning. That means human capital to start with is one of the burdens, then access to technology is the second burden. Those are sort of the preconditions. Now, those work in an environment. And if that environment has more hurdles, as we were discussing to start with, even if you had the same productivity, then you would have a harder time to grow. And on top, you will have both a harder time to invest in improving your productivity over time as an engine for growth. And secondly, a hurdle to take advantage of those productivity improvements to actually get your business to growth. So all of those are combining in a way that's holding growth back, both in the aggregate and for each individual business.
And you already mentioned access to credit being a problem. We know that that is also the case, and there are many interventions to try and get credit to the businesses that really need it. And also that access to the frontier of technology to be able to improve what they do and to grow quickly. If they can get these, which is a big if, as you said, again, is that going to be reflected in business growth in the same way as it might be for businesses in the US?
The answer is no. And the reason is this additional, we call them distortions, this additional hurdles that you're going to be facing that imply that you don't take advantage of your productivity and your investments as much to grow as much as you would in other environment. So suppose, for instance, there are taxes that are imposed specifically on the larger businesses that do not fall on the smaller businesses. Then that becomes a disincentive to grow directly. Suppose there are regulations that are faced by businesses that are larger, and that may be either because that's the way the regulation is written. For instance, you have certain conditions to comply with for your workers if you have more than 10 of those workers or more than 50 of those workers. Or it may be implicit if, for instance, you can evade those conditions by staying small and less informal. And so, again, it's the environment compounding the slower productivity that you have to start with as a business and impeding you to grow in terms of your size, of how many workers you hire, of how much you produce, given the productivity.
You have done some research in Colombia separate to this review where you were comparing the differences in market access and the appeal of the products that firms are creating to the impact of this sort of technical efficiency that we're talking about. That's not something that we often see compared. What did you discover?
You know what's interesting? This is not the most researched issue. But where people have taken a look at this, that's actually one dimension in which developing and developed economies are similar.
Right.
And the answer is both quality and market access are many times more important to be a truly successful business compared to how technical efficiency, or let me call it cost efficiency, is. It's as though cost efficiency is a precondition, but it won't make you the best firm in the world. However, if you do have the best product, if you do have the best way to get to the hearts of consumers, then that's what's going to make you really successful. I don't think people would be as blown by that discovery. We can all think of the amazing products that the truly successful firms that we have in our heads produce. In terms of how relatively important these forces are compared to each other, I think that's one crucial issue. We keep thinking of productivity as just cost efficiency. How do we cut costs? But that's only going to take you to a point of basic survival. What's really going to make you different and super successful, and thus what's going to make you grow, is these other differences.
I see. So is there potentially a risk that we overfocus on this cost efficiency dimension And we can manage to encourage firms to be very, very efficient, but they still don't have the access to the customers, or they're still not making what those customers want.
I think there is such risk. And it's not only a risk for policy, it's also a risk for private choices.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a risk in many dimensions, not only for the firms, but think of their workers. If you think of productivity improvement as just cutting costs, then many, many times the costs that you try to cut are labor costs, which are a super important part, the costs that any firm, especially in services, for instance, faces. If the way you think about improving productivity is getting rid of workers, for instance,
mm-hmm.
then the effects of that are much wider than your firm. And so just understanding how important it is for your success to do things that really get, again, to the hearts of the people who you want to sell to, I think is an important feature that we need to underscore and firms need to understand.
Tell me a little bit more about these market distortions that firms commonly encounter that affects their ability to grow.
Those are very context specific. You can imagine.
Yeah.
They depend on the regulations that each country imposes, that they depend on just the general business environment. But there are some regularities. For instance, we were talking about how important labor costs are for firms. Well, it turns out then the labor market dimension is super crucial. And so the design of regulations on labor markets is a key feature that can distort more or less how important the productivity and the true quality of firms and abilities of firms are reflected on how large they become, how many workers they hire. And so in particular in Latin America, which I have put a lot of attention to just because that's the place where I happen to live and understand the best, this is a crucial dimension. It's very different from one country to the other. There are some countries, for instance, in which the minimum wage is super high, not in dollars. If you read it in dollars, it doesn't sound that high. But if you go and compare it to the income of people, then it turns out that, for instance, in Honduras, up to 70% of people earn less than the minimum wage. That means that the minimum wage is set to a level that just doesn't speak to the realities of the economy. Then there are some other countries where that's not the case. But then you have, for instance, contributions of your workers that are extremely high. Sometimes they almost double the cost to the firm compared to the salaries that they pay to the firm. I would say that the crucial feature for governments to understand is that the package, the package of regulations that firms face may end up being a true hurdle for how you translate your efforts to become more productive into actually hiring more workers, into actually growing and therefore generating growth for the economy and generating employment for the economy. And it is that overall package that you need to look at, not only for the average firm in your economy, but also to understand that the distortions that firms face within your economy are quite different across firms. Some of the things that we sometimes feel are natural, like, for instance, saying, well, a small firm has a harder time, then let's give it a not so hard time by favoring it with lower taxes. Well, that means that they're actually taxing growth. Because if that firm were to grow, then that firm will face higher taxes. And so there's always a trade-off. There's no easy answer in these very complicated problem. But there are trade-offs that I believe governments and policymakers tend to overlook and tend to undervalue. And this line of research tends to highlight those costs that we need to understand and balance towards their potential benefits. We were talking about credit access. Well, credit is one distortion that tends to not apply to the most highly productive firms because it's harder for the smaller firms to access credit. But then if you focus your efforts on credit, only for access to credit to the smaller firms, then you're now favoring this for those firms that tend to not be as productive as larger firms. There you have your trade-off. You want one benefit, which is more access to credit. You want it for the firms that face that hurdle. That's the smaller firms. But then you're favoring being small. And so rather than giving you the answer, it all depends on the preferences of that government and the people that elected that government on what model of development you want, but you do need to be conscious and cognizant of those risks.
We like to focus on the success stories of firm growth, and certainly over the last 30 years, some of that success has been through export-driven growth. We'd like as many firms as possible to be able to copy that, but of course, not all of them can. If I'm a successful entrepreneur and I'm ready to export, but that's not happening for me, what's getting in the way? Is it my access to the market? Can I not source the inputs I need? What's stopping me?
Well, to start with, again, the likelihood that you're that successful exporter ready to export is much smaller if you're in a developing economy.
Yeah.
And so to start with, we were talking about how less productive the average firm tends to be. That means that they are much less ready to export. But suppose you are already at least in the mindset to export, which is, believe me, one of the big hurdles. The mindset to not only export, but to grow is one of the lacking parts. But suppose you are in that mindset. So the first thing that's stopping you is your low productivity. The second thing, once you have also overcome that hurdle, is, again, other obstacles that you may be facing. So again, let's focus on these developing economies and think what's different for them. They tend to have governments that are less functional, and that makes your life much more harder to overcome, to just go through the steps that you need to go through to export. That's the reason that, for instance, many of us are finding that a good customs reform that makes things faster is one big step towards getting firms to export. But then secondly, you need to reach those markets, and market knowledge tends to be harder. That's a point where many people in these developing economies have found, again, that human capital, like basic human capital, the human capital abilities to tap other markets is a crucial thing. So the entrepreneur is a crucial part of this story. The entrepreneurs that know other markets, just by the simple fact of having visited other countries, of speaking a foreign language, that tends to make a big difference. Now, I do have to say that over the last 15 years, things have changed quite a bit. E-commerce. It's now much more likely that you will be able to export through a platform. You go through Amazon and you sell your products. That makes it much easier. The fact that you need less effort also implies that some forms of exporting are not as productivity boosting and as growth boosting as others.
So Marcelo, I want to talk to you a little bit about how our ability to measure what's going on, to observe what's going on, might lead us to making better decisions about what we can do to help these firms be more dynamic and grow. Am I correct that studies a little while ago, that they used to find that firm size fell with income? Now, that's the opposite of what we assume now. What was happening there?
It's actually a very interesting phenomenon, and it just has to do with our ability to follow certain types of businesses and the fact that that ability is much less developed when the businesses that you need to follow are these tiny businesses that many times don't show up in the registries or are just simply hard to see from the streets. So suppose you cook things at your home and then go sell them. How is the government going to notice that you have a business? Suppose you're the statistical office and you walk the streets trying to identify businesses just to count them. You're never going to see them. So that means that in countries where that type of business is super frequent, we have a harder time following businesses than we have, say, in more developed economies. Because in those countries, to start with, the firms are larger, then they are more easy to locate. They tend to be registered. And so how hard it is to actually know what's going on is multiplied by a very large factor if you're in a developing economy. And this is more true the poorer that economy is. What was happening, going back to your question, is the interesting fact that the firms that were showing up in the numbers that people were looking at for the developing economies were the very exclusive, selected class of the firms that were already large in these economies. And so when they did the numbers, they saw those firms, they calculated their average size, and they said, whoa, these firms are very large. But of course, that was because you were missing a very important part of the productive sector. So as time has passed and people were surprised by that finding, and they started to dig into other types of data, they finally got to the point where they became better able to see the overall universe of businesses in these economies. And of course, you found what we already sort of had the intuition was going on, which is these firms are actually, on average, much smaller in these developing economies. You just need to count them.
You do need to count them. And of course, many of these micro businesses decide to stay informal or partly informal as well. So that's also not going to show up in official data, isn't it? How has our ability to count, to observe them, improved? What are we doing? And how is that showing up in models and the data that we have?
Well, there's actually like two lines of actions that have improved our ability to follow. One is greater efforts on the part of statistical offices. While in advanced economies, it is administrative data, that is the data that we collect for purposes other than statistics, for instance, to collect your taxes. Mm-hmm. That's an administrative record. And that's the main source of information on firms in developed economies. And that's fine in those economies because those firms show up. Well, what we have done in developing economies is to try to improve the ability to follow businesses in other types of data. And that's the data that we collect with statistical purposes. So it's surveys or censuses of businesses where, as I was saying, someone from the statistical office actually walks the street counting and identifying labels on the street. That's one part, and that has taken us a long way. Much of these more recent research has focused on using better firm-level data, mainly from these censuses. In many countries, it's only for the manufacturing sector that this is actually done more deeply. In others, it does cover other sources. That only takes us so far. And the reason for that is that, as I mentioned before, a lot of businesses are a one-person firm or a self-employed person without employees. So you're not showing up. You're not really informal because you are not failing to comply with anything, but you're not showing up. And so even if you do have a very good economic census of businesses, that type of person may not be part of the design of that survey. Or if they are part of the design, again, it's going to be very hard to just find them. The effort to run an economic census is not going to be enough. So the other thing that we have done now as researchers is to understand that some of these quote-unquote firms are never going to show up in the firm data. They're going to show up in the people's data. And that depending on the countries, the employment data or the household surveys. And so we have started to look into these data. You started this interview asking me how more likely is a business to be small? But I didn't answer that question. The question I did answer is how much more likely is a person to be in one of those, in those businesses? And the reason is precisely this. It's hard to know how many firms of that type we have, but it's easier to know how many people are either self-employed or working for a very small micro business, because in the people's surveys, or what I called before the people's surveys, you have individuals and you ask those individuals, do you work or are you employed? If you're employed, how large is the firm? And they give you categories, and one of those categories is, say, 1 to 5 workers or 1 to 10 workers.
Tell me what we understand now about the purpose of informality or these micro businesses. Do we know that they are intended as a stepping stone to growth, or is it fulfilling a different role? Is it just providing employment, something to do?
Well, it's both. So Informality is not the same as being a micro firm, but they are close cousins, very close cousins. So almost all informality, say labor informality, almost all employment without fulfilling the conditions that the law will require occurs in micro firms. It is also the case that there are some micro firms that are not informal and that they do hire workers, but the bulk of informality does occur in micro firms. And in that sense, it's very hard to disentangle what drives informality from what drives micro-entrepreneurship or self-employment. But the answer in both cases tends to be a little bit of everything you said. So one feature that drives micro-entrepreneurship or micro-employment in every country in the world, and that includes the US and Japan and the richest countries in the world, is simply non-pecuniary forces, let me call them that way. So it is, you like working by yourself. You don't want to have a fixed schedule. You don't like going to an office. You want to have a business at home because that makes your life easier to take care of your children. So all of those reasons are there. There is a lot of debate, and I believe there is little research and a lot of space to understand how differentially important that is between developed and less developed economies. That's one part of the reason. Then there is a second reason that has to do with productivity. Smaller firms, or rather less productive firms and entrepreneurs, tend to have smaller firms. And that's just because they have less potential. And so if you have a country where productivity is lower to start with, then your firms are going to be smaller. And in many cases, they're going to be micro. And in many cases, they're going to be just self-employed. And then the third reason is all these set of distortions that we mentioned. You were asking, well, why don't firms grow? And as I was saying, well, it may be because growing is too costly because then you have to hire more people. And hiring people implies you need to register them. And you need to, for instance, have a breastfeeding room in your premises. And for instance, you need to pay social security contributions and other additional non-salary costs. And so all of those things that make it costly to grow are incentives to stay smaller. And in many cases, smaller means micro. And a way to not only make that less heavy, but just sidestep it completely is to stay informal. So that set of overall menu is what drives informality as a result of all that combination. Each of those factors is differentially important depending on the environment. If you have environments where those hurdles are more intense, and that tends to be the case in less developed economies, then that's going to be part of the explanation why, to start with, they are less developed and why they are less able to offer good opportunities for work for a lot of people.
We've been talking about these distortions. Now, the way in which we find out that there are distortions is that they end up as residuals when we do the modeling, the thing that we can't account for. What can we do to better understand exactly the nature of these distortions?
Yeah, that's a very important question because we keep talking about these objects. And as you were saying, the word distortion means you are distorting away from what you would have had if simply productivity, quality, the talents of a firm that you believe should drive growth and that are good for the economy, if those were the only determinants. And so in that sense, you're correct. These guys are just residuals, whatever we can't explain with your productivity, etc. And so we know that there is this very big gap that we cannot really explain with just those factors. And that's the reason we know distortions are important. The first thing we did was to try to understand how different those gaps were across firms with different characteristics. And that's how we ended up discovering, to the surprise of many, if not all of us, it was precisely the most highly productive firms that were showing these larger residuals. The second and more interesting part, I believe, is let's start to look at specific obstacles that we believe are there, and let's try to understand how those are affecting. And so, for instance, some people have said, oh, I know that in such country, for instance, that in France or Peru, there are these requirements for you to have additional conditions at your workplace for your workers once you hit the 50 worker mark and grow beyond that, or the 20 worker mark in the case of Peru. And let's see if I not only look at that black box of the residual, but just think, oh, let's look at firms that face those, the firms just above the 50 mark compared to the firms just below the 50 mark, how different those are and what is the effect that this is having on you. And by way of looking at a specific regulation or a specific problem in comparing firms that are very similar otherwise, but that just face differentially that particular part, that has been one way for us to identify. There is a trade-off, however, and it tends to be the fact that once you focus on one specific margin, you don't see the overall set of trade-offs in the whole package of problems. And there are trade-offs between those elements of the package. We need to, looking into the future, start digging into other sorts of hurdles, regulatory and non-regulatory, related to the geographic characteristics of the environmental, cultural, other types of things. But we need to do that in a way that does not miss the big picture and that is able to put together all of this. And one way to do that is to keep the idea of having the models that are all-encompassing, that still have these residuals, and just try to understand how each of these particular regulations or characteristics bite out of that residual.
If we add up everything that we know, everything that we've discovered at the moment, and put all that together, is there something still missing that we need to discover?
So if you take out the residual, which by construction adds to 100% of the variation, if you take that out, the answer is no, we don't still explain everything. The part that we explain of that variation very much depends on the modeling. So I think we all need to be super cautious of taking the numbers too much to the exact point. But I would say we have been able to see that each of these regulations could on its own be sufficiently harmful in many cases, or each of these obstacles are sufficiently harmful for us to pay careful attention anytime we run an apparently small, say, labor reform or financial market reform, to pay a lot of attention to the potential costs and understand that just small variations may cause a lot of damage and also may have a lot of potential for both growth and unemployment generation. Pay the due tribute to science and make sure, for instance, for a policymaker, that you really got the right advisors, that you really do the numbers and understand how potentially harmful or good this is, and the interactions of it with other parts of the business environment.
There's so much to learn, but there is so much we have discovered. Thank you so much for talking about it.
Thank you, Tim.
The article is called Firm Size and Dynamics in Less Developed Economies. It's published in the Annual Review of Economics 2026. It's volume 18. Marcella is the author. You've just heard from her. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode, you know what I'm going to say. Follow us wherever you get your podcasts. You'll find us there. Our past episodes, as always, at voxdev.org, where you find articles about the topics we feature. If you like what you have just heard, tell someone else about us. Leave us a review as well.
Vox Dev Talks is a Talk Normal production. The assistant producer is Megan Bieber and our editor is Andrei Zalgarian. Thanks to Oliver Hanni and Iman Siddiq at Vox Dev.